Good afternoon, friends. This is Carolyn Evers, and as ever, just delighted that you're with me this afternoon. I'm going to take a little journey on what I think is a very interesting concept. And after the Masters gave me some information that is in one of my books, Chaos Before Creation, we found out that it was very necessary to clear the emotional baggage from our past lives that have accumulated in this present life. And so with regards to that, I have with us today a very special friend, Margie, and she has come today graciously because she has worked with me many times in the past, and we were working on that very issue of clearing some of the past trauma from my physical body, from others, and this is what we're going to discuss today. Margie, how are you, dear?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Carolyn?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I'm just so delighted to be here and have you with us.
Oh, I am too.
Before we get involved in some of our conversation, I want to remind our listeners, please call in with questions, or if you have experienced some similar events in your life, let us know. Our phone number here, our call-in number is 877-876-5227. And for our listeners in Canada, it's 888-810-8322. Well, Margie, we talked about some of these things that we had discussed in the past, and one of the things that I thought would be interesting to our audience is what the work we had done when we had worked with Julius Caesar, releasing him from the Bardo and releasing his soldiers from the Bardo. And perhaps before we get into our discussion, maybe what I ought to mention is what Caesar called the Bardo.
Yeah, it sounds like a good place to start.
Caesar came to me and dictated a book, Conversations with Caesar, and this represented, he told the story from his assassination up to actually present day, what he had seen, where he had been, and after he had died, he expected to see his gods. This Roman who believed in the Roman gods expected that at his death, this is where he would be. But instead, he talks about a journey in a land that is relatively dark, where all he could do was think about the things that he needed, that he had done wrong in the past, and the things that he needed to repair or change, forgive, and it is quite an exciting story. And as I was taking this information from Caesar, Margie, my good friend, had been working with me, and we had done a lot of clearing. And this is one of the things that I thought perhaps we would start with, Margie, if you can take up some of the story from here.
Well, my memory for stories is less clear than Carolyn's, but I remember that you talked to me on the phone one day about feeling a lot of Roman soldiers around you, particularly, it seemed to me, around your feet, if I remember correctly, around you, from your knees down, that there was this sense of them pulling on you and weighing on you. And at that point, I began to get images of the soldiers, and I felt that they were in the Bardo and that they were coming to you for help to go to the light. So if my memory meets yours, at that point, you began to do some work around this. And I believe we actually worked together at first, but I know that you did some work on your own and began to help them pass over, but there were a lot of them.
Actually, there were so many of them. They were soldiers not only from the period of time of Julius Caesar, but all through the empire. And these were soldiers who had died, not realized they were dead. Actually, Caesar discusses this at length in his book. A person can die at a moment of great trauma, like in a war, as these soldiers had died, not realizing that they are dying, but continuing to experience their life as they remembered it.
Yes, yeah. I think that's quite common. Bob Monroe talks about people seeing people who were still fighting. They didn't realize they were dead, and they were still fighting each other.
And apparently the mind has the ability to recreate what they remembered during that period of time when they were alive.
Yes, and my memory of this particular situation is I remember at one point seeing a long road lined with trees, and these soldiers representing themselves as being buried. They had become aware that they were dead at this point, but they were unable to go anywhere. They didn't have any sense of what they could achieve. And you reminded me the other day of our encouraging them to get into ranks.
Yes.
And there were lots of them, and they got into ranks with officers who were there in the Bardo there were officers and men, and they used their Roman discipline in the Bardo to get the men lined up, and they simply marched them into the light.
That was such a remarkably beautiful experience.
Yeah.
How these advanced masters came out of the light and greeted them as these ranks and ranks of Roman soldiers moved up to them, and they took them into the light.
I think it's interesting to me that there's various classes of people. When you pass over, you can have all sorts of experiences. And maybe classes is a little bit too arbitrary, but for want of a better word. And one of the classic ones is people who don't know they're dead. And in that case, my experience, you can move a lot of people into the light if you recreate the time frame that they existed and simply, as if they were alive, port them. For example, in one case, I was at the Monroe Institute, and they have a program there called Lifelines, which focuses on doing this kind of work. And during one of those sessions, I found myself in what appeared to be ancient Pompeii. And I seemed to be very tall and Apollo-like in the moment. The guides, the helpers, as some people call them, will actually use your physical energies to create whatever they need. And you simply provide an anchor, a lower vibration anchor, and an open channel. And I was speaking to these people, instructing them to go down this hill to these waiting boats. And people were running down the hill, and I remember telling someone to carry a baby and someone else to save some goats. And none of them knew they were dead, and they all went and they got on these old-style boats with people rowing, and there were square sails, and they sailed off. And they imagined they were going to some other port somewhere in the Mediterranean. And when they arrived at the higher astral planes, all of them happily in the boat. It's very easy to lose people as you go up through the vibration because they'll be attracted to like vibration. But it seems that when people think they're still alive, they stay in that vibration. And so as a mass, they can be moved. And when they got to the higher level, souls that they knew were all there dressed in, appearing in Greek garb, and they were well established before they realized they were even dead. And it was really very cool.
You and I have discussed this enough times, Margie, but there might be some people out there who are not following this discussion. Perhaps it might be a good idea. Let's just talk for one second about some of the work that you've done at the Monroe Institute so people have a concept that you are traveling astrally. Can perhaps we just take a minute and you explain that first?
Well, I can take a shot at it. There's actually various ways of traveling in my understanding. And one is astral travel, and then there's another travel, which is really using the mental body. Astral travel is what I think of as sort of you become aware of your etheric body. I call it the doughboy body. I mean, you suddenly become very plastic. You're free of your physical body. You have sensations. You can feel yourself go through walls. You can interact very clearly at times with people on the astral plane. I don't have a lot of experience with that. I personally seem to just go out of my mental body, which is a less physical feeling experience. But the advantages of a mental body is you can think yourself to another place. So there's no sense of movement, really. There's just arriving. Both of those kinds of movements are supported by the meditations at the Monroe Institute, and people do whatever it is, whichever it is that they're doing in the moment. The Monroe Institute is focused really on helping people to explore their own reality. But the Lifelines course is a particular program that they've developed to support people who are able to interact with others on the astral plane, and to help those people learn how to take people to a higher vibration, hopefully to a place where they can get help and support, meet their guides, and so forth. So a lot of healing and clearing work happens in the context of the Lifeline program.
Well, I really thank you for explaining that, because there might be some people who are not understanding this travel aspect. And is it fair to say, this is the first that I heard the story that you just told us about the people in Pompeii. Is this fair to say that these people in Pompeii were stuck in time?
Well, it's hard for us to conceive in our physical forms, but when you're not in a physical body, there really isn't any time as we perceive it. So there's no sense of time passing. There can be events, but a lot of people would be looping through the same set of events over and over but not realizing it, or repeating equivalent events over and over. So these people could actually be trapped in the action of fleeing the volcano. This is what I discovered them. They were fleeing the volcanic ash and fumes as they were coming down the mountain. In reality, they came extremely fast, and they trapped people. So people inside of the ash, in geologically speaking, now in Pompeii, they've dug up places where they actually see the form of a human body.
Yes.
And the bodies were eaten up by the acidic action, I guess, because they're just hollow spaces. They were burned, and then what was remained was just eaten up. But the actual forms were trapped. Those people didn't even know they died. It happened so suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
So they were actually engaged in the final minutes of dying over and over, but they weren't aware they were doing it over and over. For them, it was the original event, and they were still alive, and they were still trying to escape.
I have to commend you, Margie, for working in this area, because it surely is not only a great service to the planet, but a great need, because at this time, from what I understand, the astral planes really need to be cleared, because this is going to be changing.
Yeah, it's really essential to the lifting of the vibration of the Earth. If you look at the astral plane around the Earth, my understanding, and this is just based on inner experience, is that initially there was no plan to have anything like the current astral planes. There is a very, very high plane that kind of surrounds the outer layer of the astral plane, which is quite celestial in its vibration, where one can be in bliss, and where one can manifest anything one wants and be connected to the Earth, but not in any way encumbered by one's earthly lives. And then below that is what's called the upper astral plane, where Bob Monroe spent a lot of time exploring, where there's healing centers and educational centers and planning centers. And then beneath that are just lots and lots and lots of expressions of different cultures, different mindsets, as rich as human history. And those are beautiful each in their own way, but they're stuck. So, for example, one time I had a visit to what looked like Jerusalem just soon before the fall of the Second Temple. I mean, it was quite an amazing experience. I felt like I was walking through Old Jerusalem. Like a theme park of Old Jerusalem. Went into the temple, spoke to somebody, went to someone's house who was apparently a past life relative, and did a retrieval of a group of family members. And this energy is stuck, and the people in that case knew they were dead, but they were living in their own time frame, so they were having a life, but it was a life that was unchanging. There was no growth happening. There was no invention, no creativity. everything was just the same as it had always been. So there's nothing wrong with that, but it does freeze the vibration. At lower levels, you find people who are engaged in their alike is attracted to like, so people who have very unsavory habits as human beings, whether they be obvious habits such as taking heroin or less obvious habits such as complaining constantly and having self-pity, they'll be attracted to other people like them. And you get these dark groups, this sort of dark energy of people who are completely self-involved with their own negative concerns. And that's the area that is most important to clear out. That's more what you would, where Roman soldiers were trapped, except that these people that I'm speaking of now know they're dead. And they're just exploring their darker aspects until they get tired of it. The minute they get tired of it, they can make a choice, and then they can connect to their loved ones, to their guides, and they can start moving upwards and get some help. So the clearing work is focused on those negative clusters of people, of which there are ample numbers. So ideally, while we're in form in this generation, this time, we're doing that healing during our lifetime. We're uncovering our own tendencies to self-pity, our own tendencies to addiction, our own tendencies to judge, and so forth and so on. And we're doing that work now in our bodies so that when we move out of these bodies, we don't get stuck. Instead, we can go right up to our soul group, we can be clear, and we can get on with our lives, basically.
Well, before we get on to discussing a little bit about clearing from our own bodies presently, I just want to remind people one more time, give us a call. Our phone number here is 877-876-5227. If you've had some experience on the astral planes yourself, have some questions about what we've spoken about, please feel free to call and share. Also, if you have some questions about healing in general with regards to past life events that you've carried in your own physical body now, give us a call. So, Margie, let's turn now a little bit. Let's focus, if we might, on that moment of death when a person perhaps has a great amount of fear, maybe even hatred, any other form of negativity. And when I was talking to you yesterday, we had spoken before about how these issues are trapped in the physical body upon death. You gave a very interesting opinion about this. I don't know if you remember or if I'm putting you on a spot, but. Can you give us some thoughts about that?
You want that particular opinion, you might remind me of what it was.
I thought you were going to go that way.
Well, I gave you, as I remember, as usual, several interesting opinions.
Well, can you remember one? Perhaps the mechanism of what is happening.
I don't remember that we talked about that particular aspect, but it seems to me, well, in my experience, with remembering deaths from my own life, if this is what we're focusing on, if the person, you've expressed an example of where you had a lot of trauma around having been killed because it was premature, you weren't ready.
That's
right. You didn't feel you were ready.
Happened so many times.
Which is interesting because I was just reading Neil Donald Walsh's last of the Conversations with God book, number 9. I have not read all the series, but this one was interesting. And he talks about the people often have close calls, and they actually have the opportunity to decide whether they will die or not at the soul level. So at some level, it may be that a soul says, all right, this is enough. This path is no longer working for me. But if there's a push to keep going through time, my sense is that an abrupt, shocking death has a more powerful impact on the soul than if the soul had sort of planned to allow that to happen, as might happen for karmic reasons, for example. So, on the other hand, not the vast majority of of startling sudden deaths like car crashes do not trap people, because in the vast majority of deaths, people actually leave the body before it's happening. Their memory later is that they didn't actually experience the death.
Now that's interesting.
Well, if it's your planned time to die, it's very easy for the soul. The soul knows it's coming. I read recently a book about a man whose son died in a kayaking accident, and they happened to have a picture that someone took that morning before the accident of the three people who died. And this man became involved with psychics after his son died, and one of them looked at this picture and said, not knowing who the three people were, said, wow, these people's auras are very dim. They're darkening. These people are about to die.
Wow.
So this was their soul's plan at this moment for these three young people. And when the son connected with his father across the plains, he said, you know, my experience was that I left my body before it actually finished.
You know,
so,
that would be very comforting to people who have lost loved ones in accidents.
Yes, I think it can be very comforting. And to understand that dying is actually a very natural thing. It's actually more natural than being born, because coming into a body is limiting, but dying gives you the opportunity to reconnect with a deeper recognition of who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal, of course, of life is to connect to who you really are while you're in a form, because it's hard to do while you're in a form. So you connect to your own heart while you're in a form. But when you pass over, unless you're working, you know, deep self-pity or deep negativity or anger or fear, in the moment that you die, it's very easy to begin to move back to who you are. And it may take time from the earth perspective, but not from the soul's perspective. It may take experience, but there's no sense of time being lost. So the average death is actually very easy, very simple, and very natural. The deaths that you've experienced in past lives, which were abrupt and unplanned, can be painful. And those are the ones where past life clearing is usually focused on.
Well, what I'm remembering is being a warrior so many times and struck down prematurely, and that is where I had to clear so many things from the past.
Well, that's true, but you see, many warriors are not, they die, but they're not premature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no trauma. I mean, the average soul who becomes a warrior, many souls come in order to be warriors with the expectation that they will die in battle. And this is an experience they're happy to have. This is what they want. They want to be a warrior, and dying in battle is just part of that. So it is impossible to know from outside someone else's experience, you know, what their choices are. And, you know, say I feel so terribly when I hear of all the people dying in Iraq. I don't actually know. My mind says they're all sacrificed. They're all losing lives that should have been lived. But I actually know, spiritually speaking, that I don't know. And it's not my business. So I'm not inquiring. So it is possible that some of the young men and women who are dying actually had this as their life plan. I doubt that is true for all of them, given the way in which this is expanding so fast. But I don't even know that. I don't know. I just have my opinions. So in some of those cases, most of those cases, those young men and women are receiving the help they need, and they're moving on just fine. They're beautiful souls. They're very clear people, and they're not being trapped. They're not suffering. And in cases where they are being trapped, there's people on the other side who dedicate their life between lives to.
Hello.
We have a caller, Margie.
Okay. My name is Ingrid, and I was calling to ask about if I have brought this depression that I'm feeling from a past life or not, and how I can best heal this depression.
So you've been feeling a lot of depression?
Yes, I have.
And can you talk to me a bit about how you experience it? Where you experience it physically, or is it very mental?
I experience it in my heart. I feel like my heart is blocked, and I can't feel, like when I go within, I just feel pain, and I have trouble connecting to my higher self.
Okay. Are you willing to feel that pain? Are you willing to allow that pain to be listened to?
I am.
Okay. Would you like to do that right now?
Certainly.
All right. Then it's Ingrid, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I would like to ask you now to close your eyes and take a couple of deep breaths. And in your mind, acknowledge your willingness to meet whatever is being expressed through this depression. And put your awareness into your heart. And if you would, describe to me what you're feeling in this moment.
Deep sadness.
I need you to speak a little bit louder.
I'm sorry. Deep sadness. Sadness.
Okay. Now,
pain and sadness.
All right. So it's sadness. Let that sadness come up. Invite it. Let's be sad. I'll be here with you, and I'll feel your sadness, too. Feel the sadness. Allow yourself to be completely sad, to be sadness, and see if there's something deeper. What are you experiencing now, Ingrid?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry.
I feel, I just start crying and...
Mm-hmm. I'm having a little trouble understanding you because our connection, did you say you're having trouble, did you say you felt like crying?
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay then. It's okay to cry. Allow that. Allow that. And feel the sadness while you cry. Allow the crying to be an expression of this deep, deep sadness. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be sad, completely sad. And see what's deeper. See how deep the sadness goes. See if there's a bottom to it or not. How you doing?
Well, when I cry, a little bit of relief, and then I can still feel pain or sadness, but within my heart that it's hard for me to get in touch with.
Well, the first thing is to look inside and decide if you're willing to have pain and sadness be there. If there is pain and sadness, if that's what is, are you willing to allow that while it's there? Can you?
I am.
Okay. Then let's just let it be there and let us experience it some more. Allow yourself to invite it. What is the pain? What is the sadness? See if it will tell you something. See if it will reveal something of its nature. Be open to it as a friend.
Seems like there's a lot of anger.
Hmm?
Seems like there's a lot of anger.
All right. Well, let's see what the anger has to tell us. Are you willing to feel anger?
I'm willing, but I have a hard time, but I'll try.
That's all right. Just be willing. All you need to do is to be willing.
Okay.
If you're willing, God will take care of everything else.
Okay.
Sadness often covers anger. That's very normal. It's very common. And anger is a hard one to feel. But let's explore the anger. See what the anger reveals to you. Feel it as energy without judgment. Anger is vital. It's full of life force. Does anger reveal anything to you?
Excuse me?
Who's angry, Ingrid? Do you feel like your anger?
No, I feel like it's somebody else's anger.
Somebody else's anger. But if it's someone else's anger, then it's a little easier to feel, perhaps. So invite that somebody else to explain this anger to you in some way that you can understand, that will give you insight and compassion. Invite that someone else inside you. It may well be another life of yours. Doesn't matter. It's okay. Whatever that other sense of otherness is, it's okay. It's safe. What it needs is for you to hear it. It needs for you to listen. It needs for you to allow your own heart to open to it. Are you getting a sense of whether this other is a man or a woman or a child? Or
I think it's my father, yeah.
Think it's your father? What would your father's anger like to express? Do you know? Do you have a sense? What is he angry for? What is he angry about?
I don't know. It's like rage.
Okay. He feels he has rage. Now, does that rage feel like it has anything to do with you?
Not really.
So, imagine yourself as a little girl with a father who has rage. And imagine the little girl, how does the little girl respond to this rage? What does she imagine about this rage? Who is responsible for Daddy's rage?
He is,
that's right, he is. And does he try to make Ingrid feel responsible?
Yes,
but she's not responsible. It's his rage. No one else makes it happen. His rage. Yeah.
Do you care after the show to perhaps give Ingrid your phone number and you can...
Sure. Would you like that, Ingrid?
Yes, I would.
I would be able to hear you better. So.
I think you have some more clearing to do,
yes.
Ingrid.
We have some more work to do, and I would love to work with you without the interference of the radio show.
Well, thank you.
I hear it's static, so...
I appreciate it very much.
Yes. Now, Carolyn, you know how she gets his number?
Well, what I'm going to ask you to do, Ingrid, is to send me an email. Margie's not ready to give her phone number over the air.
Okay.
And so send me an email, and then I'll put you in contact with Margie. Is that okay?
Yeah, you'll send me her...
I'll send you her telephone number. You send me your email. I'll send you her telephone number because there's going to be more work that needs to be done. You're in the process of bringing this up and clearing it, but it's going to take longer than what we can do on the radio.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And Carolyn, should I
you
do
can
it?
You call me. What time zone are you in, Ingrid?
Eastern.
Well, then why don't you call me this evening if you're free?
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, you can call me as late as you want because I'm on the Pacific time zone.
Oh, you're in Pacific.
Okay.
Okay, Ingrid, send me an email, dear. We'll connect the two of you.
Okay, at Carolyn...
Carolyn at CarolynEvers.com.
Carolyn at CarolynEvers.com?
That's correct.
Okay.
Send me your email. We'll give you Margie's phone number, and she can work on helping you clear this.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much for calling, Ingrid.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Goodbye, Ingrid. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
I would like to mention to our audience that I have done work like this with Margie, and many times she is seeing the individuals involved in the clearing, and it when I've worked with her, we've kind of been able to get into something a little bit faster and clear it. And Margie, thank you for being willing to help Ingrid. I would like to also mention to our audience that Margie is working on her web page. This is some of the things that Margie's going to be doing in the future, working with individuals. Margie has many talents.
Yes. And I might say that when a person like me needs help, I need help that's unique to me. So whether it's Ingrid or Carolyn or anyone else that I might work with, each session is unique because that person needs what that person needs to explore. It's really about inquiring into yourself, and that path is precious and it's unique in the universe. So in Ingrid's case, it was actually this life issue, and that experience is rather different. I worked with a lot of past life differences with you, Carolyn.
Yes.
And there I get information, I presume, from the Akashic Records. I get visions and I have information. With this life work, I more likely get feelings. I could feel the sadness. I could feel the energies. But I don't tend to get the images as much. It's more tender when it's this life. It requires more time and more gentle care. Past life things have an impersonality to them relative to, you know, our personalities in this life. So they do tend to be fast.
Yeah.
And you're an old hand at this. It's really important to understand that the inquiry into oneself is a learned process that is distinct for each of us, but which does need to be learned and explored. So the more you do, the faster you get.
Well, that's perhaps an encouraging word to people out there who feel a little bit stuck when they say, I can't do this, don't feel it, having a hard time clearing it. And I think it's invaluable to have someone to work with in the very beginning.
It's actually invaluable, and I still work with people. When I know when I need. I have friends that support me. I also pay professionals when I need help. So there's some things that a friend can support me in and some things where I need someone who is impartial. And
mm-hmm.
That means impartial even in positive ways. I also really want to emphasize that I never help anyone clear anything. I help people meet things, and the outcome has nothing to do with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when we talked recently about our intersecting past life experience, it's really not about fixing anything. It's about experiencing what was not experienced fully in the past, or which something that was experienced from a perception that turned out not to work very well for you. So it's about revisiting and perhaps seeing more clearly events of the past. But from my point of view, I don't care whether there's clearing. I'm interested in truth. And usually truth happens as a byproduct to clear things.
Something else that we were talking about not too long ago, Margie, was synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a situation where you had a past life experience, and as you started talking to me about it, we found out that I was involved with it too.
Yes.
I didn't expect that one.
Well, I didn't actually either, but I did a past life regression with a professional, and it was very deep, and the life I remembered was interesting but didn't have any emotional issues for me. It was more sort of, oh, this explains some of my soul choices. But when I told you about it, you had an immediate tightness in one of your shoulders.
Well, as you were telling the story, and maybe we need to explain this a little so people can recognize these things. Margie is telling me this story about this past lifetime, and as I am listening to it, I'm starting to get a pain in my left shoulder. And the pain is starting at the neck, going all the way across my shoulder, down my left arm. And the pain was starting to become so intense, I said, Margie, I gotta get off this phone and do something about my shoulder. I've got this pain. So we started talking about it. And thank heavens you didn't let me get off the phone.
No, I never let you get off the phone. It's very clear when there's a sudden onset of pain in response to some kind of discussion, that pain is the body responding to the content of the discussion. In most cases, I mean, clearly if someone has a pre-existing physical issue that's manifesting, that may not be so. But you had no problem with your shoulder before. So
no.
It was very clear that it was an opportunity and that it was somehow related to the content. So in an informal setting like our relationship, such things come up spontaneously and are addressed spontaneously. And that's a rich gift one gets from if any human being commits oneself totally to knowing the truth and inquiring within for that truth, because there's no truth outside of you. There's no truth outside of any of us. So you inquire inside for the truth, which is your truth. And in that, if you're totally willing to encounter truth, then you attract people who are totally willing to encounter truth. And in that moment, you then begin to attract friendships and professional relationships and counseling relationships, all relationships will support you in inquiring into truth. And you support all people that come into your life in that. So I have relationships with people like you, Carolyn, where we're both dedicated to supporting our own inner truth. And so we can help each other spontaneously in the midst of a casual conversation. When people make that kind of deep commitment, their lives begin to move in that direction. They get richer and richer and more supportive.
Well, in that particular pain, we started working very similar in the manner that you were working with Ingrid. And what came up was that I was a soldier who was trying to defend you in that lifetime and grabbed the reins of a horse of my superior. He wasn't going to take any truck with that. And he just whipped out his sword and did away with me. In that area where I was having that pain. And so apparently that was something that needed to be cleared. However, the interesting aspect of that, when I had an acknowledgement of that situation, I realized that perhaps my life wouldn't have been ended so quickly if I had not been so brash. In other words, if I had not grabbed my officer's reins to stop the events that was going on, he might not have drawn his sword and killed me. And so it was, you might say, a weakness that I had, and I gave it some thought, and even down to the present time, not to be so rash, take a step back and try and resolve the situation without a confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in all fairness, at the moment, I probably had to be confrontational to in my mind, save this particular child. But going through all that, I was able to go within and realize that there was something that I could work on today.
Yes, and I don't know that life needed to be cleared or even was cleared. I didn't get a sense that that man was trapped in the bardo. But it needed, perhaps you needed to have this memory in order to be inquiring within right now. We don't know for sure. So sometimes it's definitely a clearing. You want to take someone out of the bardo. But usually when that happens, I have an awareness that that is happening.
I didn't have the sense that that this particular soldier was caught in the Bardo. I had the sense that it was a message of perhaps going a little bit slower, being more sure, accomplishing my goal without being confrontational. That seems
beautiful.
To have been the message.
And that's beautiful, and you hadn't shared that with me before. You see, that's the true gift there, is that you get to see in this life something that you learned from another life,
mm-hmm.
and that is a real challenge. I mean, you know, we each have our set of challenges as souls, and people can take lots of lives to work through those challenges. So to get this kind of reminder is really beautiful. It's really useful, and it's very beautiful.
Well, we're going to have Margie with us in a future date, and she'll get her website finished, and you'll be able to contact her directly through her website. Let me give the telephone number one more time, Margie, in case there's someone out there who feels that they have something to contribute, have an experience, perhaps think of a clearing, or have some questions about past lifetimes or about the astral planes. The phone number here is 877-876-5227. Margie, are you ready for a story that I haven't talked to you about?
Sure.
Because this is interesting. I had a friend say to me that she remembered very clearly a previous lifetime. And I'm always curious about people's memories. I sort of like how these past lives interact with our current life. And so I questioned her about it, and she said that she had lived during the Second World War. And she was in France. She was living with her parents on a farm, and there were German soldiers moving through the countryside, and her parents could hear them approach. So the mother told her to go into the basement and don't come up no matter what. So the child, this is a little child, runs to the basement, and she hears all these terrible sounds. She didn't know exactly what was going on, but she had an idea. And so when the sounds stopped, she came upstairs to find out that her parents had been brutally murdered, blood everywhere, and she thinks she's alone, but she's not. The soldiers are still there, and, of course, they kill her. Now, as she is dying, she remembers, how can people act that way? She wanted to know what motivated people to be so cruel. And that was the last thing that she remembered as she is dying. Now, in this lifetime, she's a trained professional working with psychopaths and their deviant behavior.
You get what you asked for.
Exactly. This is the point I wanted to bring up.
Well, of course, she it wasn't like she was forced into this current life. She wants to answer that question.
Yes, and so she's understanding the behavior because this is what she's studying.
Well, at least she chose to come in and study it instead of actually engaging in it,
which is
an alternative way to achieve understanding.
So we started talking about it, and now she's a healer, and she does very well with healing these things, which she really has. But as a side note, because I find this very fascinating, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring up the story, is in this lifetime that she is living, it so happens that her father is the German soldier that had killed the family.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother is the same mother that she had in the last lifetime. And so we started talking about that, and I asked her if the father was learning compassion and if he was making a change and so forth. And she said that he was, but it's been very slow for him.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were addressing was that in this situation, there it would have been human not to have anger, not to have fear, not to have hatred when a person's being, being killed in this manner. And so the mother has come back,
and in compassion, helping the German soldier to heal.
Yes, yes. That's quite beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the soul level, there is no blame. There's personalities, I gather. I mean, we have our ways of being, and some are easier and some are harder. But everybody is trying their best to do better and to evolve as a soul. So when there's these planning sessions, everyone intends to do the best they can. And that's always underlying everything that happens on Earth, hard as it is to believe. You know, your worst enemy is still at the center, a soul who is trying the best he can. He may have lost control of the body or something, but it's very easy for us on Earth to judge someone on the surface and basically write them off. I've been known to do it on the highway myself. and it's really important to our own individual growth and happiness to begin to say, you know, it's about what I'm doing and my inner choices and my soul growth and supporting those around me. But it's none of my business to try to write someone off just because they're making a choice that I wouldn't make. They are coming from where their soul came from, and they are, as a soul, doing the best they can.
Which brings up a very interesting point before we leave, Margie, and that's this word of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
I, from what I have learned of this process, it's very important not to make judgments because you're going to have to come back and rework those judgments.
What did Jesus say? Judge not, lest you be judged.
That's right. So in wrapping this up, for people who are interested in some of the healing aspects that we're talking about, you might be interested in Chaos Before Creation, which can be found at my website, www.carolyneevers.com, and also Conversations with Caesar. That is a fascinating story because Caesar tells and describes where he has been since his assassination up to the present moment. And Margie, my dear friend,
mm-hmm.
and partner, we've cycled around together many times.
Yes.
Before this. We'd like to have you back.
Be fun.
Yes, it would be. And we're hoping that Margie gets her webpage set up soon. We'll talk about all of the wonderful things that she can do. And for all of my friends out there, blessings to all of you. May we all be aware of who and what we are and to follow our dream. Would you like to have to say one last thing to the audience, Margie?
Yes. I would like to say that I'm really pleased to have a chance to be with you. And I hope that if I can help you, you find me and allow me to help you. God bless you all.
Goodbye, everyone, and bless each and every one of you. Bye.
Bye-bye.